Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Our American Heritage. Today's host is Kim Kennedy. Yes, you're hearing correctly. You're looking for Arch Hunter. Well, Arch is here in the studio, but he is the guest today. And this is being recorded during Liberty Week at WFYL. That's a big deal here at WFYL. It's the main impetus for why we do what we do, working for the preservation of freedom, educating people about the truths of freedom, which includes a good part of the founding of our country. Perfect it was not, but Arch, that is not the goal of what we do. No human being is perfect. But as we have proven in conversation after conversation, year in and year out, liberty is to be much preferred over tyranny, such as socialism, etc. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely, I would agree with that. And our founding fathers gave us the ability to have a government that continues to go through process in order that we might have a more perfect union.
Yes, and we declared our independence on July 2nd, 1776. The Continental Congress voted to declare independence from England. But you know, Arch, a lot of the facts have been obscured or just dropped out of the narrative over the year. Why was there even a need for a Declaration of Independence? We want to talk about that today. The times that led up to the point where enough American citizens said, enough, we have to separate from England. Where do we start with that narrative?
Well, before we start with that narrative, if I may, let me share with our listeners that I was a Vietnam era kid, and I grew up during the latter stages of the Vietnam era, and my parents are World War II generation. My father was a veteran of World War II and the Korean conflict. And by the time, Kim, I got to be a teenager, I began to look at America through a lens of eyes that I was embarrassed. I was angry. I was bitter towards America. And I even actually joined the SDS.
Wow.
As a teenager.
Okay.
And after college, I decided I had the opportunity to travel through Europe. And when I went to Europe, I had determined in my mind that I was going to find a country to move to and never come back.
What?
And renounce my American citizenship. And when I went to Europe, one of the third greatest impact of my life is I was greatly humbled to see what was there compared to what we have.
And what did you see that had that impact on you?
And it's no fault of Europe. Small nations, crowded nations, nations that were no near advanced that we are here and the opportunities that we have here. And I was greatly humbled to see and understand more about what we had here as Americans. And Kim, when I returned home, I vowed that I would begin to understand my nation for the rest of my life. And not knowing in 1972 that I would ever end up a teacher years later, if I ever taught, I decided in my mind, I wanted to teach American history. And as I began to study in 1972 on my own and began to read about the history of our nation, I was dumbfounded at what I didn't know and what we all need to know about our nation. I can say I'm one of the now, as I saw last night, I'm one of the now 49%. I'm a proud American.
That's great.
I am a humbled American and I am a grateful American. And I'm humbled and proud, not because of my arrogance, but because I'm grateful because I live in this country.
What a privilege.
Where freedom reigns. And it's a great privilege to live here, not in selfishness or not in being superior, but the wonderful privileges we have because of our freedom.
That's right. Blessings of God. And our system is not a perfect one, but it is the best. And I think the greatest aspect of liberty is that you can improve it. You can work on the system. Whereas when you are in a socialist system or other systems, it is what it is.
And this is what, as much as I'm concerned about where we are in America right now, I'm still confident because we have the ability to go through process and go through change. A lot of the voices that we now hear, particularly on the left, that I consider to be anti-American, will eventually be dulled. Because of we still have that ability to be free and we still have the ability to continue to go through process. Mm-hmm. And because we're not a socialist or a communist or a totalitarian government, I still believe in the hope of American citizens that as they begin to wake up that what's going on in our country, that they will rise up and understand that we have an element in our country that totally wants to eliminate our past and what we've done in the past. And Kim, I just read this morning that the hometown of Thomas Jefferson, Charlottesville, is not going to celebrate his birthday this year or next year.
And why is that a bad thing? Instead of shaking our heads and wringing our hands, Why are these bad trends? I guess you heard about Nike with the Betsy Ross.
sneakers.
Yeah. Well, why are these suddenly bad people? And are we coming to accurate conclusions about them?
I don't believe we're coming to accurate conclusions about them. I think for many, many years in our history, we viewed so much of our founding through one lens of eyes. As our founding fathers were marble and they were statues and they were perfect human beings. And now it has swung so far to the other way that they're hypocrites, they're homophobes, and just goes on and on and on, that I don't believe I'm wrong. I hope I'm not in the wrong camp. I believe that we will swing back till we get a good concrete understanding of our background, our history, our founders, and we continue to see them more as human beings with their faults. And there's an element now that only wants to see one side.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, they want to eliminate Washington, Jefferson, Nike sneakers, Betsy Ross flags.
Tear down statues.
And I'm convinced that we'll swing back. And the reason I say that is because 40 years ago, when the liberal historians went after our founding fathers, the conservative historians fought back tooth and nail. You know, there's more books written every year about the history of America in ever in our
That's
past
awesome.
Because of that.
That is wonderful. And you know, Arch, interestingly, when you study the mid-1700s of our nation's founding, do you see, I see, and I think you would too, that the circumstances bear a lot of similarity to the injustices that are happening in America today. Your thoughts on that?
Yes. Yeah. And if we go back, we have to go back way before the Declaration of Independence, because as an historian, and this is where people's eyes get glazed over, you know, we can't see anything in a vacuum. And we have to go back to long before the Declaration of Independence. How did we get there? We need to remember that we were British citizens. We were part of the British Empire. And we had been British citizens for about 150 years. And because we were so far from Great Britain pretty much left us alone. The colonies were independent states. We had our own governments. We had our own taxation. We were self-sufficient.
We weren't causing trouble.
The mercantilism of the British Parliament and the King loved us because of the influx of economy that we were giving to the mother country.
We were paying our taxes.
And we were pretty much left alone. And as we begin to move west, in the early 1700s is when we began to have these problems with the French, and that gets us to the French and Indian War. And that was really the setting for the Declaration of Independence.
Okay.
Because we asked the king to send over troops to protect American colonists as we were moving west from Native Americans and taking the land. And the Native Americans sided with the French because the Native Americans saw that we were now occupying their lands, but the French only wanted to have forts on the frontier for trade. So when all that began to happen, and then we went through the French and Indian War or the Seven Years' War, we also began to see, particularly from General Braddock's defeat, that the British military, as strong as it was and the superpower that it was, could be defeated. And that began to percolate in the colonists' mind. It's still long off before we get to the Declaration of Independence. But that began to colonists to realize that as the British were the superpower of the day, that doesn't mean they couldn't be defeated. As well as in Vietnam, the Viet Cong understood that America was a military superpower. That doesn't mean that they couldn't
change their tactics.
They
huh?
couldn't, yes, yeah. They changed their tactics. So with that, we have the background of the British paid no attention to us. The King, Parliament paid no attention to the colonies because we were self-sufficient. We were doing fine. And with the mercantilism, they were totally happy with us. And after the French and Indian War, the King and Parliament asked us to help pay the proceeds for the French and Indian War. And it was not the taxes that we revolted or rebelled against. It was the representation. Because we were not and could not be represented in Parliament because Parliament and the King and people living in Great Britain saw us colonists as second-class citizens.
Mm.
We weren't worthy to have representation in Parliament.
So it was a slave status almost.
It was
just maybe slightly above.
It was
indentured servant.
Somewhere in there.
The stepsister that
yeah,
Cinderella.
The stepsister. We had more freedom than any other colony or any other part of the world as colonists before the French and Indian War. Because we were very self-sufficient. and we were taking care of ourselves. And after the French and Indian War, when Parliament asked us to pay for some of them helping us with the French, it was the representation that really began to cause the fervor. We sent Benjamin Franklin over there, and he was mocked and criticized and made fun of before Parliament. Benjamin Franklin.
Did other areas in England have representation in Parliament?
They did. If you were born and raised on the island, you had representation in Parliament.
But if you were a British subject elsewhere, you did not.
You did not. And because the colonies were economically far advanced to many of the other colonies that the British had at the time, because a lot of the other colonies were not British citizens or the primarily European, you know, we had that going on. And so we wanted representation, and absolutely not.
So I'm wondering, as I listen to you, if it had gotten to a point that the Crown was looking at America as its cash cow, and that the citizens, I use that term lightly,
yes,
would serve a purpose to basically produce, and we would tax and take what we wanted. Would that be an accurate summary of what the attitude was towards America at that time?
Yes. It's almost like the children that were good children and the teenagers that are good teenagers, you don't have to keep your eye on as much as the one who's causing difficulties and problems. And we were loyal, obedient colonists through the French and Indian War. And as time went on, we began to understand that if we're going to pay taxes to help defray the costs of the French and Indian War, then we would like to have representation in Parliament. And it was absolutely not. General Washington, or Lieutenant Colonel Washington, who raised Virginia militia, was never going to be an officer in the British military, because if you weren't born on the island, you could never be an officer in the British military.
Wow. Boy, they were really backwards in their thinking. They really didn't see the vision of what America could become. And instead of getting us on the team, they were trying to, sounds like, really hold down.
Control.
Not a good plan.
Not a good plan. And there's so many different complex items to this. Over the period of 5 or 6 or 7 generations, we no longer viewed ourselves as British. We were British citizens, but we no longer viewed ourselves as British. We're Americans. We're colonial Americans. And there was no longer any tie to Great Britain if we were the 4th or 5th or 6th generation.
Many
colonists,
of whom had never been to England.
Never. Most colonists had never been to England, and they were the 3rd or 4th generation that had long left England, and they grew up here. And so the colonists considered themselves to be Americans, not British.
So that was their first loyalty.
And as time went on and we began to go through this process, we desired greatly to have representation in Parliament, particularly after the French and Indian War, when Parliament began to really pay attention to the colonies, because Great Britain was broke and they needed the money for taxes. That's where the conflict really started. So the French and Indian War turned into a global war, but after it was over, when the French are no longer on our frontier, in the American mindset, it's land. We desire to have land. Land was your wealth. In Great Britain, Kim, 9 out of 10 people owned no land. Ooh. 9 out of 10. In New England, in the New England colonies, 9 out of 10 owned land.
Wow, what a contrast.
And with all the land here, particularly in our part of Pennsylvania and New York and Virginia, the colonists began to move westward for land. Which, again, it's a whole different conversation, but that was really the problem with the Native Americans, and that's another discussion. But the land is what we wanted. If you were born and raised on a farm, you left that farm as an adult, and you moved west, and you purchased or just occupied more land, and that was considered your land. So land was our wealth. So after the French and Indian War, in the lack of understanding of colonists, the king and Parliament gave us the proclamation of 1763 that didn't allow any colonists to move over into the Ohio River Valley. And again, the reason from the king and Parliament was they wanted to protect us. but they didn't understand the mindset of American colonists that we considered land our wealth, and it was almost, not almost, it was born in our DNA to get land, to have land so we could live. And when the kings and the parliament said, you can't move out to the Ohio River Valley because one, there's Native Americans out there. Two, we can't protect you out there with British troops. They threw the hammer down on us, and that really began the whole permeating underneath of the rebellion that eventually transpired.
And Arch, we have to transpose ourselves back to that time period.
We do.
Because what we take for granted now was unheard of then. The Bill of Rights, the idea that people had rights, that was not common thinking. Most people saw the king as having the rights, and basically their existence was a gift from him, a privileges from him. The idea that people could be independent, that people could be self-existing and provide for themselves and didn't need landlords and all that was revolutionary.
Very much so. And because we were five or six generations past most Americans coming to America, we were self-sufficient. We were taking care of ourselves. Each colony, or I'm going to say colony or state, had their own government. We represented ourselves in those governments. We were taking care of ourselves, and we understood now by birth, we had rights and privileges as colonists, but we didn't have representation from Parliament. And in Europe, you were born into a certain class.
That was it.
You had rights. Yeah. You were born into the rich class.
You had it made in a shade.
You had it made where the commoner.
Not so much.
Nothing. And because Parliament and the king looked at us as commoners.
Mm-hmm. As a means to an end.
A means to an end. We didn't have.
Like socialism does.
Mm-hmm. We didn't have representation, nor would we ever have representation.
Mm, these are great points. And we didn't have a formalized government, but we'll, I don't want to get ahead of myself. The Brits responded by passing some draconian acts, the Stamp Act and some other things, correct?
Stamp Act, Sugar Act, Tea Act, the Intolerable Acts, the Townsend Acts.
This was their way of clamping down.
And again, we need to go back, as you just said a few minutes ago, to understand history. We have to understand the mindset. And the mindset of the king and parliament was, we asked for their help. They helped, but they went overboard after it was over. And we believed that it was unfair for them to ask us to help pay to recoup some of the expenses from the French and Indian War because we didn't have representation. Mm. So Edward Burke and others in Parliament kept saying to Parliament,
Let them in. Well, he was a great visionary.
Great visionary. And he kept saying to Parliament, the king, you don't understand the American mindset. You have to understand their mindset. These are free.
We want them on our team.
Let them in and understand that these are free and independent people, and you'll never be able to put out that fire of independence in them.
Well, look at the money they could have made if they had invited us to the table. Because if it had been reasonable and discussed, we would have gladly paid taxes. Britain would have been much better off after the revolution. They must have been in even worse financial condition. Well, I don't want to get ahead of myself.
No, I'll come back. Our revolution ultimately turned into a world war.
Okay.
Because the French declared war on the Brits, the Spanish declared war on the Brits, the Dutch declared war on the Brits, and they understood that if the British military is now fighting on all these different continents, they don't have enough manpower, military, to win everywhere. Mm-hmm. So France, Spain, Holland, they were trying to get pieces of their empire back from Great Britain.
And Britain, we should tell our listeners, was the superpower of the day.
It was the superpower of the day. They had the largest military. They had the largest navy. They were controlling 1/4 of all the land in the world by the American Revolution.
Okay. So, all right. So we're putting things in context here, which makes the bravery of some of these patriots even more astounding. So all these draconian acts are being done as a way of the powers that be in Britain saying, you know, we're not talking with you. We're not going to treat you as an equal. We're not going to invite you to the table. You'll do as we say or else. And that's when people started rising up and people started talking out. That's when the Liberty Trees came to be and people would meet outside to air their grievances.
Yes, yes. And this fire began very small. And this fire of revolution and independence started in Boston. And again, that's a whole nother discussion of the Puritan mindset of New England and where that all started. But the Liberty Trees and people began to discuss little by little of really what was going on incrementally as Parliament and the King began to clamp down on the colonies. It'd be like raising a child that you never paid attention to until they were 25 years old. And then you tried to start disciplining and honing them in. And by then, the rebellion of the nature has set in, and it's past the point of no return. And with these taxes that Parliament and the King began to put on the colonies, that's where the fire began slowly, little by little. And every one of these taxes, Kim, were a total disaster.
And they infuriated the people. I'm sure they were a hardship on people, a genuine hardship.
Well, actually, Kim, the taxes were very small. They were 3 pence.
Or if they were around today.
But again, so it's not, if you look at taxation without representation as tyranny, what John Adams really emphasized there was the representation that's tyranny, not the taxes. But to have to pay taxes without having any representation as free and independent mindset Americans, it's past the point of no return.
Yes. Yes, and they knew where it would go. These people had foresight. This was just the beginning of something very bad.
Well, Edmund Burke did, John Locke did before him, but Parliament would not listen, the King would not listen.
So even though many appeals were made to Parliament and the King, Benjamin Franklin went to England to represent the colonies. Was he able to speak to the King directly?
He couldn't speak to the King, but he went before Parliament.
Okay.
And he was barraged for 2 hours and mocked and made fun of in front of Parliament.
So there was no real conversation.
There was really no conversation. Again, because they viewed us as second-class citizens. Okay. We were subjects of the crown.
Who are you bumpkins to come here and, mm-hmm. and deign to walk into Parliament?
It's more we were subjects of the crown and not equal to the citizens okay. of it, the living in
so
Great
Britain.
So you
have no right to even be here and breathe the same air we do. And as we keep alluding to, folks, this was the mindset of that time period. And don't think that history can't repeat itself, because it is. But that also is another conversation, Arch. So you've set the stage for us as to where to, at what point did the leaders in America say, that's enough?
Well, we go through the taxes, and then we eventually get to the tea tax and the Boston Tea Party. We get to the Intolerable Acts, where the Parliament closed down the British Harbor. Massachusetts government was now being controlled by the British and royal governors. The Brits sent troops over to Boston, being housed in citizens' homes.
With or without permission?
With or no permission. And we were now, Kim, being governed by British judges, no longer governing and judging ourselves.
All right, so you're not going to have a fair shake in the courts.
No. No. And as well, now we're being controlled by people being sent over from Great Britain to govern us, to tax us, to control our government. And now you have two British soldiers living in your home in Boston.
Wow.
And so we began little by little to rise up and revolt. And by the Intolerable Acts, the British had 4,000 troops in Boston. There was about 9,000 citizens living in Boston.
Message sent.
And so the rebellion began with this organization called the Sons of Liberty.
And tell us a little bit about that.
Sons of Liberty. We're now convinced that the founder for the Sons of Liberty was Samuel Adams. And we know, Kim, 3 or 4, maybe 5 members of the Sons of Liberty. But even to this day, the majority of them, which we think were about 300, have been kept a secret. So the Sons of Liberty with Samuel Adams would begin to have meetings in the local churches and assemblies in Boston to begin to, Samuel Adams was trying to get Bostonians to rise up.
Boy, we could sure use some Sons of Liberty, some 300 people like that in these days.
Yeah.
And we are dealing with the same form of tyranny.
And Samuel Adams was not a successful man. He was a failed businessman. He started a brewery and he went bankrupt. Now, sadly, in America, how does anybody who brews beer go bankrupt?
You got to work hard at that one.
You have to work hard at that. So Samuel Adams is now 50 years old. What he was success at as a propagandist, he saw that we needed to be an independent nation.
Arch, we got to end part one. The time always flies on this program. Folks, we're going to pick up with part two in our next edition of Our American Heritage. You don't want to miss that. So, Arch, it's been great talking with you.
Thank
I look forward to picking up the conversation. Listeners, enjoy the day.